This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
My name is Aaron Kelly, and I'm the CEO of Advanced Symbolics and the co-founder.
And I'm Kenton White, and I'm the chief scientist and co-founder of Advanced Symbolics.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. Can you tell us, our listeners, what Advanced Symbolics is and what it's all about, please?
Sure. Best way to think of Advanced Symbolics is she's a AI for market research. Now, when we think about data science and data, there's lots of different types of data, right? There's data collection, you know, and what we always hear from our customers is they're overwhelmed with data. The difference between, say, analytics and data and market research is that market research does that statistical analysis of your data. You should never be using any data without statistical analysis and modeling applied to it, because you have to remove the bias, the error, all of that. So Poly does that for you automatically, which typically would require a team, an agency, a market research agency with statisticians. Poly does that complex work automatically and all of the data collection as well.
Kenton, anything you want to add to that?
Nope, that's a very good description. She's got more practice at describing Advanced Symbolics than I do.
Great. And how long has the company been around?
7 years.
Right. And if you don't mind sharing the story about how did you start? What was the pain point you saw in the marketplace and how did you decide to go after it?
I'll start. And then, I'm a reformed academic. I do research. I had a previous company that in 2009 I sold. And then I went back in academia. And my focus was, we have all this amazing data from online now in 2009, like Facebook and Twitter and all this data. And I've always wanted to figure out what we can do to extract really great information from it. So at University of Ottawa, I started doing a research about creating proper measurement on all this data, making the right kinds of samples and putting it all together. And we originally were working on mental health, suicide reduction. And we did very well and solved a lot of the problems about how to measure and extract great insights from all this data. And that is when I met Aaron. And Aaron can tell you about a bit about from her perspective what she was doing and then how we came together.
So at the time that I met Ken, I was the chief operating officer of a large advertising firm in Canada, and we were a creative agency. But this was right at the time, this is, 10 years ago, when people were wanting analytics, right? They wanted to know, not just, hey, I had this creative idea, but did you test that idea and how do I know it'll work? And so we didn't have that in the agency. So I spun off a separate company. I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, as I think a lot of people harbor that desire. But I made the same mistake everybody else did, which was doing analytics versus research. Right. And analytics, of course, is the raw data. It's not properly modeled. And so I was getting lots of attention, but I wasn't getting a lot of results. And then somebody introduced me to Kenton, who had the ability to automatically model data. And that's when the two of us came together, me as the business and partner with a background in advertising and market research, so that we could apply this not just in the health space, but to the marketing space.
So what sets you apart from a typical market research firm? What's the key difference there?
Time and money. So a typical market research firm, especially if you want to do complex research, like understanding people's latent motivations or a conjoint analysis or something like that, that's going to take weeks, if not months, to do, and it's going to cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Poly can do that in minutes for the flat rate of a monthly subscription. So you can ask, the other problem you have with market research is survey fatigue. People don't want to take surveys. You got to go get a panel. You got to get people to participate. Sometimes you have to pay them. With Poly, we're taking all of the data off of social media. We're properly sampling it so that you do all that statistical work and you get it in minutes for a very, very low cost.
So it's a subscription-based model then, your business model?
Yes.
Okay. And do you do one-off projects? So someone came to you with a large one-off, or is it a subscription or nothing?
Absolutely. And you know why? Because when they do the one-off project and then they go, oh, I have another question. Oh, you know what? Maybe you should subscribe to AskPolly. Yes, we will do a one-off project because Polly is addictive, because you'll see now, because it's so low cost. You have what one of our customers said, what he realized was, if you had an AI that could predict the future, which is what Polly does, she forecasts your market for you. How often would you use it? You know, you would use it every day. And right. Most of our customers are doing that. So yes, we will do a one-off project.
Okay, great. And Aaron, you mentioned you were CEO of an agency, but prior to that, was it prior to that you were involved with the Board of Trade here in Ottawa?
Prior to that, I was the vice president of marketing for a large development, like construction firm.
Okay.
And before that, I was the head of the Board of Trade for Ottawa. Yeah.
Gotcha. And, why this industry? This is a question to both of you, but what was it about this industry that appealed you to start a business like this?
Well, I'll start. It wasn't the industry that appealed to me. I've always wanted to build Asimov's foundation. My background is physics, and I've always wanted to be able to measure how people are going to, what they're going to do and how they're going to behave at a global scale. And so that's what I want to build. And in order to build something of that magnitude, I can't do that in academia. We have to do that in the private sector. And so that means building a business around it. And Aaron has been really great. I bring the tech, and then she has the business vision of what we can do to build around that to have a sustainable company. And then Aaron can tell you about what she likes about this market.
Yeah, well, what I like about this market is fast iteration, right? Business moves at the speed of light, so we can really fine tune Polly very, very quickly. Important to know that we're not going to stop at the marketing, though. Our vision is Polly is going to, once she's been fine-tuned, she's going to help us, well, for a number of things, help people get over their addictions, right? But us as a community to come together, because what we're finding when we, for the projects we work on, is that, you know, we live in a very polarized society right now, but the reality is people aren't as far apart as they believe. And when you have an AI that can read everybody and plot everybody on a graph, what you actually discover is the things that separate us, they're little pinpoints on a graph, and often it's miscommunication. So understanding how people see the world and how you can communicate to the other side more effectively, that's what Polly is really doing. And fine tuning her for marketing, which is all about communication and convincing and understanding, that enables us to then deploy her for that wider cause.
And Aaron, you and I have a similar background. They were both, you know, senior executives, but working for someone else for years before starting on a entrepreneurial journey. Can you share with our listeners what that was like for you to go from that, you know, kind of safe haven of working for someone to a certain degree, to all of a sudden going out on your own with Kenton as a partner, and what that was like?
Very frightening, not because Kenton was my partner, but it's scary at first, and then you have to keep reminding yourself that life is scary, right? Like there is no, I don't know what it was like in the 50s and 60s because I wasn't there, but you know, I'll take other people's rose-colored glasses for it. Sure, we don't have that stability anywhere. I mean, you don't have stability as an entrepreneur. In fact, I think you might even have more because you eat what you kill, right? Like yeah. If you need stability, go get more customers. Like that's what it is. Whereas in an office environment, it's not just about doing a great job, as I'm sure all your listeners know. It's politics. It's things that you don't have control over. It's all of that. So there is something refreshing about being in control of your own destiny. And I think that's the best part of being an entrepreneur for me.
And Kenton, anything you want to add to that?
I agree with that. My experience is more from academia. And again, for me, it's similar, like in academia, where always having our hand out for funding. You know, sure, I've got job stability as an academic, you have tenure and all that, but it depends on how much funding you bring in. And so you're constantly fundraising and you're not able to actually do the work that you enjoy. And in the private sector, being an entrepreneur means that I can do what it is that I enjoy doing, and it's so liberating. It's so I enjoy it so much more. And having a great partner like Aaron, I don't have to worry about having enough to eat because he's so good at bringing in the customers for us.
That's great. Is there anything that you weren't prepared for? I mean, I know when I started this business 10 years ago, I was a pretty experienced person. So I thought, okay, I've got all this figured out. And then you realize pretty early on that you don't have it all figured out. Was there one or two surprises either one of you'd like to share with our listeners that you didn't see coming, even though you thought you had all the answers before you started? Or am I the only one that thought that?
Yeah. I would say that if you're going into business, assume you know nothing and go from there. I would say the biggest shock for me early on was a lawsuit. Wow. That I have never been sued before in my life. I guess being Canadian, Kenton grew up in the United States, so that was a little bit perhaps less shocking for him. But I have never been to court. I mean, I've never even been divorced. Like, I don't even have that. Like, I had never been sued. So I was like a very innocent Canadian. We had a person early on who, let's just say, claimed that we had offered to bring him into the business. Okay. Right. Went to court. It's incredibly stressful. And now I will keep everybody out of suspense. We prevailed. But what is prevailing in the court system? The judge ordered him to pay us. And that was what, like 3 years ago, Ken? We still haven't, we haven't seen a dime. Of course, we had to pay all of our lawyer's fees. But I would say it was hugely educational, though. I actually today see it as a bit of a gift because it was very early on in our history. And it's made me a much better operator. It has made me much more vigilant. And now as we're bigger, we're a much bigger company now than we were then. I think it's helpful to have had that experience. Because like I said, it makes me a better operator. And I think if I hadn't had that experience, you can tell somebody you should do this and you should do that. But until you've been through that stress and you really understand, oh, now I see why it's really good to have solid paperwork. And, and to me, I'm always thinking how would this represent in court and things like that. And so, so that was pivotal for us. And I think will be key to future success.
It's an interesting comment because sometimes when I'm mentoring or coaching other entrepreneurs, if they come to me with that, there's a bit of naive, I find, attitude sometimes about, well, yeah, that's just going to be fine. Well, hang on. Have you thought of all of these different things that could potentially happen to you down the road? And it's not running your business out of fear. I don't believe in that, but I don't know how to put it, but really it's about making sure that you're prepared.
Yeah. And yes. And I think there's a lawsuit early on will really help with that. And I say that from experience. And I think if we're honest, like if we thought about all the things that could go wrong before we started the business, we wouldn't start the business. And that's probably why a lot of people don't start a business. But what I would say is you will figure it out. The key thing is to have a character trait of resiliency, right? Because if you have that, and you have to ask yourself, are you that? Maybe you won't know until you start a business, but I would say if you're that, then you will get through any hardship. If you're the type of person who crumbles over little things, then you should probably not start a business.
And Kenton, would you agree with that or anything you want to add?
Resiliency is definitely up there. The thing that is, you know, I want to say shocking, but is very different from academia is rejection. You know, we oftentimes, especially when we're in corporate or in academia, we are sheltered from rejection, especially as a researcher, as an engineer, really sheltered a lot. And then when you're an entrepreneur, rejection happens all the time. You get rejected more than you succeed. You know, you get so many more no's and you get yeses from customers, from staff you're trying to hire, from everyone. And, you know, that takes a little bit of adjustment, especially coming from an environment where you've been sheltered from rejection, right? Because they want you to feel great. And so that's a big learning for me, was, you know, how to cope and how to deal with rejection, in addition to the resiliency that you do need.
Aaron, you made a really interesting point that is, I'm paraphrasing, but not everyone's cut out for this. And it's one of my pet peeves has always been shows like Shark Tank and Dragon's Den, which I'm a big fan of both, but sometimes they glorify it or they don't show all the struggles and the people that, obviously they're not going to show people that fail because that's not the purpose of the show. But I think sometimes shows like that may be doing a bit of a disservice as to just how hard this is. Would you both agree with that?
Yeah. It's hard. And it's hard on so many levels that they can't go through with the pitch or the success stories. I'm sure you've talked to many, many entrepreneurs who tell you it took 10 years to be an overnight success.
Yeah.
You know, and for yes. 10 years, you're being rejected. You don't have the right product market fit. You don't know who your ideal customer profile is. You are getting no after no after no. You're stressing over trying to collect enough money from your accounts receivable to be able to make payroll, you know, next month, you know? And, you know, those are the things that they don't show on those shows. And that is why it's not for everyone. A skill I've learned is just how to compartmentalize, how to be able to say, okay, the week is done. It's the weekend. I'm going to put all of that in a box and I'm going to try to enjoy the weekend with my family and not let it, you know, take away, because I need that to rest and recharge. And I think that if you can't do that, then being an entrepreneur is going to be quite a struggle, you know?
And I would, I think that I love what Kenton said, that quote, it takes 10 years to be an overnight success. It takes 10 years to build a great business. I mean, it really does. So do not think of this as, I'm going to build a great product, everyone's going to love it, it's going to revolutionize everything. You've got to get it out there. It's a slog. You know, when I worked, I mentioned I worked at a big construction firm. We bought a real estate company. And one of the things I learned really early on is the reason the realtor sends you a calendar every month or has an excuse to reach out to you every 30 days, because we really don't know. You can try to time the market. You can do all that when somebody's going to want to sell their house. You don't know. The key is work like a dog and be in front of them all the time so that you come to mind. And that's, you know, that's what it is. Building a business is just showing up every day and being there, because you don't know when that's going to be your opportunity, and you just have to slog it out for 10 years. Like it's not going to be, people aren't going to show up when you're ready. Hey, it's 18 months and I built my product. Everybody line up, right? No. It's now you've got to stick around for the next 10 years so that when people need it, they call you, right? Like it's.
Well, years ago when I was in my early 20s, I had a sales job, and my sales manager at the time said something that stuck with me and still applies. He said, 5% of the market's ready to buy your product at any one time. You just got to go find that 5%. Mm-hmm. And that has always stuck with me, you know, despite all the technology and all the changes today, sales or revenue, driving revenue is still somewhat of a numbers game. You're right, Aaron. You can't just throw your shingle out and say, okay, well, you know, line up and here we go. It's not reality. And these days, especially, there's more and more touch points required to get a new customer. So you've really got to be putting yourself out there, whether it's with content or research or whatever. You know, it's the math is there, and it's a relatively simple formula. The formula is simple. Doing it is the difficult part, I find.
Yeah, with a
On that kind of same note, is there a business lesson that you've learned from working within your industry that in the last year or two, has there been some change within your industry that you know you had to kind of ride the wave of or get out in front of, and is that come into play in how you run your business?
Oh my God, change in this business.
Well, I was going to just say, start off with LLMs. So generative AI has really, everyone is now looking for AI. That is absolutely fantastic because we're an AI company, so people contact us. But for us, a real pivot in the last year was when we figured out how to build our zero-shot classifier, which turned something that required professional services and really knowledgeable people in order to build and train and execute into a completely self-service tool. And because it was so different from what everyone else was doing last year, which was generative AI and ChatGPT and LLMs, figuring that out was really, really a great breakthrough, really exciting for me as a researcher. From a business perspective, it's now really, really hard to try to explain how this is not generative AI, how this is not just an interface on top of ChatGPT. And Aaron has a lot more bruises on that, I think, than I do.
Yeah, and let me just explain for your listeners, a zero-shot AI means an AI that does not need training. So you're hearing all the time that this artist is suing OpenAI because they use their face or their voice or their singing or what have you. Polly is the first commercially available zero shot. She does not need to train off of anybody. That's interesting, but you can't get that out there because everybody's like very of the view that these things all need training. Well, if OpenAI needs training, they all need training. Well, OpenAI was a skunkworks, or ChatGPT was a skunkworks in OpenAI. They didn't plan it out. They just kind of developed this thing. Polly was developed from the very beginning to think about those lawsuits because, as Kent and I mentioned, we're all about the lawsuits here. So we developed a zero shot that where we would not be accused of stealing anybody's ideas. But now you have to get attention for that because it's not the cool thing that everybody's talking about. It will be the cool thing in 18 months. Everybody be like, oh, we need a zero shot. We're the first. Stanford has a zero shot. It's like within the 63% accuracy. We're above commercial threshold. So it'll be the cool thing soon. And we're out there socializing and saying, you don't have to worry about that. You can do a zero shot.
And I got two more questions for you. One is, for anyone that's listening, that's sitting on the fence, assuming they meet the criteria that we discussed, that they've got the thick skin and resiliency and all of those other characteristics that make for a good entrepreneur, is there one last piece of advice you'd give to them if they're thinking of doing something like this?
Just do it. And I will add to that. Set aside an hour a day when you've got your job. Before you quit your job, set aside an hour a day. You can do a lot if you wake up an hour early or you cut out the TV and do an hour in the evening. You can do a lot on building your business just with that. So you can make the time, and things like I don't have the time or their excuses, just do it. You can make the time.
And Aaron?
The only thing I would really do some soul searching and figure out, are you a resilient person? I mean, are you resilient in the life you have right now? If you're the type of person who loses confidence easily or falls apart or is very emotional or what have you, then that would be an indication that you shouldn't do it.
Listen, last question before we went live, if you can share with our listeners the good work that you do in our community, please.
Yeah, we've doubled down on, because Polly is a cognitive AI, and we got our start. We're both very interested in mental health and addictions and things like that. And so we do a lot of work on suicide research. If you Google ASI on suicide research, and we do this voluntarily, we don't charge for it. We do a lot of work in suicide research and looking to identify vulnerable communities, vulnerable individuals, and how do we, most importantly, message to reduce suicide rates.
And mental health is very, very important to the both of us. A personal note, my brother, who passed away a number of years ago, he was paranoid schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. So I grew up living with mental health and just seeing how hard it is and how few resources there are for this. If a person had a debilitating disease like leukemia, we have so much empathy for them. We try to help them out. We try to, help them through and do everything we can to make sure that they can succeed. But then when a person has mental health issues, they're schizophrenic, they're bipolar, they're manic depressive, they're OCD, we as a society beat them up. We say, you're lazy. You're not important. Grow a backbone and get on with your life. We all feel that way. And it is as debilitating as cancer or any other horrible disease that we treat. And then we just treat the people who have it. We kick them to the street,
I lost my mother to mental health as well. So.
Yeah. It's an amazing cause, and thank you both for everything you're doing within that. And it is changing, but boy, it's slow, our attitudes towards it. And, I've got three kids, and, you see, especially with youth today and some of the struggles that generation faces that we didn't face. Anyway, thank you for everything that you're doing for us, for that area of our community. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thanks, Pat.
Before we let you go, where can our listeners and viewers find out more about your company?
info@askpoly.ai. So you go to our website, askpoly.ai, and there'll be a contact us. And yeah.
Great. Thank you both for your time. Really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Pat.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.